Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to our Foundation Bible Study here at First United Methodist Church, Murfreesboro. I'm Cliff Wright, the senior pastor. We believe that the study of Scripture is important for us as followers of Christ, and I hope that you find this week's study on the Gospel of Matthew meaningful and inspiring in your own personal life. Our Bible study meets each Wednesday at 6 p.m. in the sanctuary. And I also hope you'll consider joining us at one of our four weekly worship services at 8:30 and 11 a.m. on Sundays, both in the sanctuary and the Family Life Center. And as always, you can find us at our website, www.fumcm.org, or you can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at FUMC Borough. The purpose of our Bible study is to help us fulfill our mission of growing disciples of Jesus Christ who know Him, love Him, and serve Him. I hope this week's study helps you in your own personal journey towards knowing, loving, and serving Christ in your life. We start off this last semester and last part of the book of Exodus with the Ten Commandments. Sunday we had a sermon in here on the traditional service, primarily on grace, remembering our baptism. A lot of times folks struggle with grace and law, so you know, if we are loved, and we don't have to earn that or deserve that, we're just loved. Oftentimes, the question is, so what do we do with the law, and are we required to follow the law? At other times, people will talk about breaking the law. You know, that commandment. You may have heard it expressed that way. You know, somebody broke this commandment, or they broke this commandment. When you really look at the commandments, we don't break the commandments. The commandments are always there. When we don't follow them, we're the ones that get broken. The commandments are given because God loves us so much. That's the reason that the Ten Commandments are there. It's like the love of a parent. You know, you think about it with your children. There were laws in your household, I bet, right? There were laws in my household when I was growing up. Sometimes I didn't like them. But as a parent, those laws are there because parents love us, and to allow any kind of behavior, just go do whatever you want to do. Well, we can hurt ourselves if you don't have those regulations, those laws of life for our protection. Amy and I have one grandson. I don't think I've told you that we have a second on the way. Have I told you that? Trust me, you'll hear more about that. And you understand that. You got grandchildren. You understand that. But we have one, and he'll be three next month. Eli will be three next month. Amy and I are pretty convinced that he's the smartest soon-to-be three-year-old that's ever existed in the history of the world. Our son sent us a message the other night and said, no more saying how smart Eli is for the next 4 months. That's what he said. No more talking about how smart Eli is for the next 4 months. And then he said this: anyone who puts Play-Doh in their ear has that compliment revoked. We're thinking that there's going to be a law
in that household. What do you think? I think there's going to be a... The commandments are a gift from God. This is not something to make life difficult and hard for us. The commandments are here because God loves us so much. That's why they are. That's why we have them. And when we say that God is first in our lives, when we say that we love God, following the commandments, our obedience is our way of showing that. It's the way that we live that out. You remember the guy that came to Jesus and said, "Hey, what have I got to do? I mean, just boil it down for me. Just tell me what it is I've got to do." You remember the answer? We've talked about this before. Do what? Love God with everything you have. Heart, soul, strength, mind. Love God with all that you have. And what was in the second he said, now the guy only asked for one. Remember Jesus, you know, his little lanyard. Jesus gave him a second. And the second is likened to it, he said. What was that? Love your neighbor as yourself. I think when he said the second is likened to it, I mean, the way I understand that is like you love God. One of the ways you love God is by loving your neighbor. You can't love God and not love your neighbor. So you love your neighbor and you love your neighbor as yourself. So those two go together. What's interesting is when you go back to the Ten Commandments, all ten can be divided into one of those two categories: relationship with God, relationship with other, love for God, love for each other. All ten can be divided into those two categories. The first four have to do with our relationship with God, and those are the four that we're going to talk about tonight. And then next week we're going to finish up on the Ten Commandments, looking at the last six, and they all have to do with our relationship with others. Okay? And this is the way we live. And when we follow these, when we live these that are for our own good, life is better. That's what God gave these to us, because it makes life better. It makes your life better. It makes my life better. We can say, well, we broke a commandment. No, if you don't follow them, we're the ones that get broken. So let's go back. Remember now, and then after next week, we'll be taking big chunks again, big chunks of passages as we make our way through the rest of the book. But for the next two nights, just these few verses, starting with chapter 20. And God spoke all these words, saying, "I'm the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Now then he says this, 'You shall have no other gods before me.'" Now get the first part of that. You know, for years when I would look at the Ten Commandments, I always just, I immediately jumped to verse 3. "You shall have no other gods before me." And that's the commandment. You shall have no other gods before me. But you've got to get the first part first to really get at the real meat of what this of this commandment. The first part is in verse 2. "I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Now then, you shall have no other gods before me." It's important. God is reminding them that what God had done for them. God is reminding them that this is the God that is the only God. The God who did what? Delivered them, was there for them, brought them out of bondage. This is the God where there is no other God. Remember all that I've done for you. Remember all the times that I've been there for you. Remember that I delivered you. Remember that I love you. Remember that I care for you. Now then, there's no other gods before me. I really got to thinking about this, the power of this. Just yesterday, I was asked to speak, and some of you heard me. I was asked to speak at UMW, our United Methodist Women. And they had asked me, Martha Cho had invited me to come. Martha Cho had asked me to speak on my call to ministry. And I had told her, I said, "Are you sure about that? Because I've got a real boring story." And she said, "No, that's no different from any Sunday." No, she didn't say that. She may have thought that, but she didn't say that. But she said, no, it's your story. We want to hear your story. And I told her, I said, well, it is my story. It's my story. And the more I got to thinking about it, is my story is more like a lot of other people's story. I told her, I don't have a story of call where, I was on drugs or caught selling drugs and sent to prison. And while I was in prison, saw the light, met Jesus, and had my life changed and became, and if you've got that story, that's a powerful story. And there are ministers in Middle Tennessee that have that story. I heard about one the other day that have that story. That's a powerful story, but it's not my story. It's not mine. But I was sharing them my call and how that happened. And the thing that hit me about that is the times where I didn't recognize it at the time, only looking back, the things that happened, and you wonder why did that happen? Why did that happen at that moment? And you didn't even know it at the time, but you saw these places where God delivered you. Has that ever happened to you guys? You didn't know it until you look back on it. And there was God who was there acting in your life, delivering. You wonder, why did this person show up at this particular time? Why did it, a lot of my call had to do with being afraid because I had the grades to get into medical school and that's what I was going to do. And then realizing I'd never really thought about it. Is this what I want to do? And running into a old high school football buddy of mine, Steve Duncan, who had transferred to Murray State after going from UTM to Knoxville and then to Murray State, I was asking him, "What are you doing?" And he was working in special education. He said, "I found the love of my life. This is what I want to do," and which led me then into volunteering at an adult Easter Seal Center, working with adults with mental and physical handicapping conditions, which led me into special education, which led me into youth work. Don't ask me how all of this started. It's too long of a story. It took me 35 minutes to tell the ladies the other day, which led me to this, which led me to, but it all goes back to running into Steve Duncan that day. And I got to thinking, what would have happened if I had run into Steve Duncan that day? Does this ever happen to you guys? And I ended talking to them about this. I said, this is the thing. I said, a part of my call is Amy. Part of my call in the ministry is Amy. And I've shared this with you a little bit before, but remember, I don't know whether you remember or not, but Amy and I graduated high school together, but we only had a couple of dates. We had a couple of dates in high school. We got to be seniors. I had a girlfriend. She had a boyfriend. Her boyfriend was from out of town, And then graduated. Amy went off to school. I went off to school. I went off 10 miles to University of Tennessee at Martin, and Amy went to Baylor, and she was gone. And then things happen in life. You know how it goes. I started divinity school at Duke. Was unhappy, came home, was going to transfer to Vanderbilt, and went to a Christmas program that my sister was singing in with the Golden Tones. Is that what y'all were called? Weren't you in that? Golden Airs. Golden, excuse me, sorry, Golden Airs. And let me tell you something, and we're going to move on, but I want you to hear this. No offense to any choir member. At that age, going to hear a high school choir sing Christmas music was not high on my list of things to do. Are you with me? That was not, let me tell you, I can't even tell you why I was there, except more than likely, my mother, God love her, probably badgered the bejeebers out of me to go. I'm sure that's what happened. And so I went, just to shut my mom up. So I went. And I got there, and two rows in front of us was the back of this head. And I thought, that looks like Amy Ragsdale sitting up there. And sure enough, and the whole program, that's what I was focused on. And then I was thinking about what I was going to say, you know, and what my line would be, and how I was going to make, you guys know how this works, you know, I was going to make my smooth move. And so we had our first date that night. You remember what it was? I think I've told you this before. It was to the cantata at the Methodist church. So we went from the music pro. This was at the Baptist church, by the way. Baptist church. And that's where I saw her. And then we went to the cantata that night at the Methodist church. And that was a week before Christmas. And I saw her every night for 2 weeks while she was home. She was at pharmacy school. And then Valentine's we were engaged, and August we were married. Now, where does that fit into call? I've told you before. I don't do what I do without Amy, and there have been many times in my ministry that I would have quit if it hadn't been for her. Many, many, many times. And I think about this. Do you guys ever think about stuff like this? I think about what would have happened. What would have, you know, what would life have been like if it hadn't been for that night, that afternoon, at that musical of the Golden Airs, singing Christmas music.
You're welcome.
I mean, have you... Really, have you guys ever, have things ever happened in your life and you realized if this didn't happen, this wouldn't have happened, and then this wouldn't have happened, and then all of this wouldn't have happened? Look, I don't know how to explain all this stuff. It'll make your head explode, okay? But what I'm saying is, this is what my point. My point is that there's a God who is a deliverer, who cares for us, that is a part of our life. And that's the God who says, you can have no other gods before me. Are you with me? You can have no other gods before me. Before whom? The God who loves you, who cares for you, who's been a part of your life, is still a part of your life, is there in moments that you've recognized, but multitudes of moments that you didn't even recognize and probably never will recognize as long as you live, that this is this God of incarnation is with us. And it's that God who loves and cares and supports and is there for us who is saying, you can't have any other gods before me. Are you with me? Now, most of us, I would think most all of us would say, of all the commandments, this is the one that we always follow. I mean, we don't think about we don't worship a sun god or a god of thunder or someone. We don't have any other gods, right? But when you think of what God is, the definition of God, and I've shared this with you before as well, Paul Tillich said this, great theologian Paul Tillich said, whatever is of ultimate significance, whatever is of ultimate importance in your life, that's your God. Whatever is of ultimate importance in your life, that's really your God. So when God says, I'm the one who delivered you, people of First Church. I'm the one who loves you. I'm the one who's by your side. I'm the one that supports you. I'm the one that's never going to stop loving you. Don't have any other gods before me because I'm the one who does that. Are you with me? But if we look, how do we know whether that God is the one that is really the God of our life? How do we know that? How do you know that? How do you know what is the God that you worship? How do you know what is the God of your life? Well, what would Paul Tillich say? Whatever is what? Of ultimate importance in your life. Let me ask you this. This is not a bad exercise to do. You don't have to do it right now, but after we leave tonight, take a few moments and write down the three most important things in your life. What are those three most important things? Just write those three things down. Just write them down. Where do you spend your time? Where do you spend your energy? Where are your thoughts each day? What are you consumed with. If it's not the God who has delivered us and cared for us, it's not that you don't have other interests, but if it's not the God who has loved us and cares for us and delivers us, look, guys, we're following the wrong God. Does that make sense to you? Following the wrong God. And it's easy to do that. It can be work, our professions. It can be money. It can be positions in life. It can be our possessions. But none of those things deliver us. It can be, look, it can be things, it can be our cars, our car. You know what kind of car I was driving, by the way, back in 1979 in December when Amy and I started, you know what kind of car I was driving? Amy can tell you what kind of car I was driving. You know what I had? I had a 1977 Subaru station wagon. Ain't nothing wrong with a Subaru, but I want to tell you, Subarus have come a long way. Matter of fact, the last car I almost bought a Subaru. I thought about buying a Subaru. That little Subaru Outback, that's a nice little Subaru Forester. I thought about that. That's a nice little vehicle. In 1977, Subaru station wagon. You know what it looked like? It looked like a phone booth. Do y'all remember phone booths? Zach and Crystalyn, they don't even know what a phone booth is. Phone booths. And it looked like a phone booth turned on its side with four wheels and had an AM radio. It was fancy. AM radio and a heater. Didn't have an air conditioner, but it had a heater. It had an air conditioner. Roll the windows down, go real fast. It had to stick your head out the window. That car couldn't deliver me. Are you with me? That car couldn't. Cars can't do it today. Can't deliver us, can't love us back, can't care for us. Only God. And so we said, look, I'm the one who delivered. Don't forget that. I'm the one who delivered you. I'm the one that brought you out of bondage. Now then, don't have any other gods before me. How do we make sure that there's no other gods before God? Well, that's where our time is. That's where our energy is. That's what our focus is on. God is first. Here's the other thing about that commandment being first. That's where our desire for following all the other commandments come from. It's only with making God, and I think that's the reason it's first. It's only when God is first in our lives that we have the desire to obey the rest of the commandments. Look at the second one. It's related in some degree. Verse 4, you shall not make for yourself a graven image or any likeness of anything that's in heaven above or that's in the earth beneath or that's in the water underneath the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them. For I am the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children of the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. Now, this one is related to the first, but it's at another level. The first, there's no other gods. I've got to be your God. The second, then, is you can't worship even that which represents me. This is the one about idols. So you can't make that your God. You know, it's important, I think, for us to have, we have reminders. We talked about that Sunday in Remember Your Baptism. That the water is significant in what it reminds us of. Bible is significant in what it points us to. Church buildings are significant in what they remind us of and point us towards. Are you with me? But if we take any of those things and make them what's most important, then they become an idol. I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen in things like, you take anything that's there to point us to God. Years ago, I was in a church where we built, you guys can relate to this, I was in a church where we built a new church, moved from one location to another, built a new church. Lord have mercy. I'm going to tell you. Anybody here that was on the building committee when this was built, is anybody here that was on the building committee? I mean, God love you. God love you. You did a great job, by the way. God love you. That's hard work right there. That's hard work. I thought, Lord have mercy, we're never going to get this thing built. That's what I was thinking back in those days. And you've got all these, and if you're not careful, And this is what happened. This is what happened where I was. If you're not careful, all of a sudden, that which points you to God becomes your God. That which is there to point you to God and focus you on God becomes your God. I mean, it was David. It was all people could think about. What color was the carpet going to be? What were the pews going to look like? What color was the walls going to be? What was this going to be like? What was that going to be like? What about the rose window? How big was it going to be? How small? What about this decision? What about that decision? What about this? Then we got moved in. It was just consuming, all consuming, all consuming. And all people could talk about was building, 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 building. Then they had to pay for it. And all they could talk about was how are we going to pay for it? How are we going to pay for it? How are we going to pay for it? And the problem is, what was there to point people to God became God. That's an idol. That's what he's talking about. You guys know how I feel about the Bible, don't you? I mean, what talk about it in Bible study all the time. But the Bible is here, is God's word to point us to God, but the Bible's not God. Right? You with me? But what can happen is people can take this that points us to God, if we're not careful, it can become our God. Any of those representations can. So God is saying, don't take those representations that point people to me and make them your God. That becomes an idol for you. And then look at what he says. This is a little bit troubling, but think about the truth of what he's saying. You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. Now, we think of that word as meaning envious. In the Old Testament, the word there in Hebrew that's used for jealous is not a word that is connected with the emotion of envy. Okay? It's more connected to the feeling of care. This is it's a God who cares for us, who is interested in us, and is therefore concerned about the decisions we make and the choices we make and what it is that we do in life. So when God, when he says, because this God is a jealous God, what he's saying is God cares about how we live. God cares about the fact that we have these idols and we're making them more important than God himself. And then he says, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children of the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to those thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. We understand that what's being said here is not that if you do something and you do something wrong, that's then the punishment is going to fall upon future generations that haven't even been born yet and have nothing to do with that. Okay? It's more like the influence that we have. Think of it that way. The influence that one generation has on another generation. So if there's one generation that has fallen into idolatry, look, it's just natural that impacts the next generation and the next generation. I mean, the things that you and I do here in this church, look, it has an impact on those that are going to come after us. And it has an impact positively and negatively. So it can impact negatively, but it can also impact positively. So the importance then of making sure that we follow the one that is God, not what's pointing us to God. I've been in churches. This church is actually, you guys, to be complimented, you've done a wonderful job on this. You have, in this church, we have two different styles of worship. We have traditional and modern. And for the most part, you guys get along. For the most part. I've been in churches, they didn't get along. There have been churches where it's like the worship wars. Have you ever heard of that? It's like the worship wars. And people just fight. And it's like, no, our worship, our way of worship is the way. You know, our way of worship is the way. And here's what happens is the way of worship takes precedence over the one we worship. And so the way that is to point us to God actually becomes what's more important. It becomes more important than the God we worship. Does this stuff make any kind of sense? That's idolatry. That's idolatry. So, one God, don't have idols. Then here's the third one, verse 7. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God. Hold it. I've skipped one somewhere, haven't I? You shall have no other God. Where are we? You shall have no other gods. You shall not make a graven image. Verse 7. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Not taking the name of the Lord your God in vain. What's that one talking about? What comes to mind when you hear this, don't take the name of the Lord your God in vain? What comes to mind immediately? What do we normally equate that with? You don't have to say it, but describe it to me. What is that? Don't take the name of God in vain. That's not saying what? Don't say it. Yeah. Isn't that what we normally think of? And if you hear somebody say that, you say, oh, they're taking the name of God in vain. I'm not in any way proposing that saying that is a good thing. That doesn't surprise you, does it? But that's not what this commandment is about. That's not a good thing. But the commandment's much, much deeper than saying a curse word. Okay? Much deeper than that. Taking the name of God in vain has more to do with using God's name for our own benefit, for our own purposes, either to damn someone, so it's a literally damning of someone or a certain situation, or it's using God's name in a way that benefits me and my and mine. Okay, so it's using God's name, and which is God's character and who God is, to benefit me. It's like someone that may talk a lot about God and how God's, you know, whatever, you know, in their life, but they're not sincere about that. They're just using that to get something because they know this person or this group of people are influenced by that. Does that make sense? So you're using God's name for your own purpose. Here's some examples of taking God's name in vain. There are some people that they mean this, so they're sincere, so they're not, this is not a way of using it in vain, but there are some people that are, they're Christian whatever, and they want you to know. Somebody maybe perhaps is a Christian counselor, okay? And they're not using God's name in vain by saying that. They're just wanting people to know, if you come to me, I'm a Christian counselor, okay? But if somebody uses God's name in their, like, for example, advertising, and they're, you know, really, they're not sincere about that, but they're using that to be able to reach a group of people for business purposes. That's using God for their own vanity, for their own purposes, to benefit them, using God's name in vain. Are you with me? I was in a church several years ago, and a couple started coming. They hadn't been coming to church. And man, they started coming. And I mean, they were there. And they were there every Sunday. And man, it made me feel so good. You know, people hadn't been in church, and all of a sudden they're in church. People were talking about them. Oh man, so-and-so, you know, back in church. And finally, I think it was my lay leader, Bill, that came up to me. And he said, "You see them out in church?" I said, "Yeah, yeah." He said, "Well, don't get the big head." And I said, well, I don't think I'm getting a big head, but I sure am glad they're here. And he said, well, it doesn't have anything to do with you. And I said, well, maybe it does. And he said, no, it doesn't have anything to do with you. He said, see, Cliff, he, the guy, is running for office here in the community. And after the election, he won't be here again. I said, how do you know that? He said, well, let's just wait till the election and we'll see. They were there every Sunday. I thought, see, they're in. They're bought in. Came that Tuesday, had the election. Next Sunday, boom, gone. Next Sunday, gone. Next Sunday, gone. Gone. Never came back. Never come back. Till the next election. Now, what is that? That's taking God's name in vain. See, that's much, much deeper than saying, listen, I'm not advocating using God's name in a curse word. I'm not advocating that at all. But that's not getting at the meat of what taking God's name in vain is. Taking God's name in vain is using God for your own benefits. That benefit. Does that make sense? And that's when, because when we do that, who's really God? What's really most important? Us, not God. So, don't take God's name. Don't use God's name for your own benefits, for your own... My Old Testament professor, one of my Old Testament professors at Vanderbilt years ago, Walter Harrelson, said that the more literal translation here is those who use God's name for mischief rather than in vain for mischief. I kind of like that. Verse 8, we'll be through for tonight. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor, do all your work. The seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your manservant, maidservant, cattle, sojourner who's within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that's in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Remember this day, the Sabbath day, and keep it holy. So you remember it and keep it holy. There's a reason why you remember it. You keep it holy, and so you rest. There's a, you know, look at what God is saying to us there. There's a rhythm to life. There's just a natural rhythm to life. If you don't follow this commandment, you don't break the commandment. We're the ones that get broken without that rhythm of life, of that time of rest and taking the time to remember and to reflect who it is that is what? Our deliverer, the one that cares for us, the one that loves us, the one that brings us out of bondage. And so when we remember that he's the only God, one of the ways that we express that then is taking a time where we step back to remember what that's all about. Look, we can turn this into a legalism, and a lot of us have lived during a time when there was this kind of legalistic approach to this, you know, to where, as one person I was reading in my study said, you know, years ago it almost came across as thou shalt have no fun on Sunday. And a lot of us remember those days. You know, hey, no fun on Sunday, okay? So that's not what this commandment is about. But then I've lived long enough now to watch the pendulum swing from don't have any fun on Sunday to anything goes on Sunday. Sunday's just another day. And when Sunday just becomes another day, we lose that flow of life, where even God created 6 days but took one day. So as God did that, we do that to take that day to not just step back, but to step back with a reason and a purpose of remembering who it is that is God in our life. In kind of a strange way, this has come home for me with my mom. My mom is in assisted living over in Union City, and mom has macular degeneration, and it's pretty severe. Mom doesn't, she it's hard for her to see TV. She doesn't hear well, and we can't get her to wear her hearing aids. Maybe you have a mom like that. And she doesn't hear. So she doesn't see well. She doesn't hear. What I've noticed with mom is that here in the last year is my son calls it white space. Everything is white. Every day is the same. There's no difference. So you lose that flow of life. I remember years ago, before our daughter, Meredith, when she was just a little thing, and she had not learned the days of the week yet, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, you know, she had not learned that, but she had a flow of the week, and I can remember her, you know, when she would say, when are we leaving to go see, when are we leaving to go see Grandpa and me, Mama? And we said, well, we're leaving in 3 days. And she would say, when is that? And we would say, well, you know when that three days. And she would say, okay. And she said, so tomorrow's cartoon day, then church day, and then we leave. And we said, that's right. Cartoon day, church day, and then we leave. And you can say Saturday, Sunday, Monday, or you can say cartoon day, church day. Do you have that in life? Is there a flow to your life? See, what he says is life was creating. We were created to be creatures kind of in a flow of life. And when we get out of that flow and Sunday becomes for us just this any other day, we lose that flow. And if we're not careful, we can lose what is most important about life. So that day becomes that time. Listen, you know, not in a legalistic way. What's fun about that? There's no fun about that. But in a day where we set aside time to celebrate, we set aside time to remember, we set aside this time to reflect on, wait a minute, this is who God is in my life. This is who God is. And we come to give thanks for this God who's delivered us, cared for us, brought us where we are, and is always by our side. First four commandments, our relationship with God. Remember where that's important in the book of Genesis, as we talked about back several weeks ago, and I've reminded you a couple of times. You go back and you look at the story of Genesis. You look at the story of Adam and Eve, Adam and Eve. Remember, that's a story of brokenness in relationship with God. They became their own God. Listen, why should we do all of this? We want to do it our way, becoming their own God. The very next story is a story of what? Cain and Abel. What's that brokenness? Brokenness in relationship with each other. So then you have this guy that comes to Jesus and said, tell me what it's all about. And Jesus said, what? Love God, brokenness in a relationship with God. Love your neighbors yourself. Brokenness, repairing the brokenness in the relationship with others. And one of the ways that we love God is in our relationship with those that are around us. First four commandments, relationship with God. Next week we'll look at the last six commandments, our relationship with each other, and then we'll move on. Okay? Good to see you guys here tonight. Glad you're here. Let's come and pray.